columns on either side of the water. At first, the plan seemed to work. The enemy divided and streamed toward us along the shore. When they were halfway across, our defenses kicked in. The jogging trail erupted in Greek fire, incinerating many of the monsters instantly. Others flailed around, engulfed in green flames. Athena campers threw grappling hooks around the largest giants and pulled them to the ground. In the woods on the right, the hunters sent a volley of silver arrows into the enemy line, destroying 20 or 30 Dracaenae, but more marched behind them. A bolt of lightning crackled out of the sky and fried a Lystragonian giant to ashes, and I knew Thalia must be doing her Daughter of Zeus thing. Grover raised his pipes and played a quick tune. A roar went up from the woods on both sides as every tree, rock, and bush seemed to sprout a spirit. Dryads and satyrs raised their clubs and charged. The trees wrapped around the monsters, strangling them. Grass grew around the feet of the enemy archers. Stones flew up and hit Dracaenae in the faces. The enemy slogged forward. Giants smashed through the trees, and naiads faded as their life sources were destroyed. Hellhounds lunged at the timberwolves, knocking them aside. Enemy archers returned fire, and a hunter fell from a high branch. "Percy!" Annabeth grabbed my arm and pointed at the reservoir. The titan in the gold armor wasn't waiting for his forces to advance around the sides. He was charging toward us, walking straight over the top of the lake. A Greek firebomb exploded right on top of him, but he raised his palm and sucked the flames out of the air.
"Hyperion," Annabeth said in awe. "The Lord of Light, Titan of the East."
"Bad?" I guessed.
"Next to Atlas, he's the greatest Titan warrior. In the old days, four Titans controlled the four corners of the world. Hyperion was the East, the most powerful. He was the father of Helios, the first sun god."
"I'll keep him busy," I promised.
"Percy, even you can't..."
"Just keep our forces together." We'd set up at the reservoir for good reason. I concentrated on the water and felt its power surging through me. I advanced toward Hyperion, running over the top of the water. "Yeah, buddy, two can play that game." 20 feet away, Hyperion raised his sword. His eyes were just like I'd seen in my dream, as gold as Kronos's, but brighter, like miniature suns.
"The sea god's brat," he mused. "You're the one who trapped Atlas beneath the sky again?"
"It wasn't hard," I said. "You titans are about as bright as my gym socks." Hyperion snarled.
"You want bright?"
His body ignited in a column of light and heat. I looked away, but I was still blinded. Instinctively, I raised Riptide just in time. Hyperion's blade slammed against mine. The shockwave sent a 10-foot ring of water across the surface of the lake. My eyes still burned. I had to shut off his light. I concentrated on the tidal wave and forced it to reverse. Just before impact, I jumped upward on a jet of water.
"Oh!"
The wave smashed into Hyperion and he went under, his light extinguished. I landed on the lake's surface just as Hyperion struggled to his feet. His golden armor was dripping wet. His eyes no longer blazed, but they still looked murderous.
"You will burn, Jackson," he roared.
Our swords met again, and the air charged with ozone. The battle still raged around us. On the right flank, Annabeth was leading an assault with her siblings. On the left flank, Grover and his nature spirits were regrouping, entangling the enemies with bushes and weeds.
"Enough games,"
Hyperion told me.
"We fight on land."
I was about to make some clever comment like, "No," when the Titan yelled. A wall of force slammed me through the air, just like the trick Kronos had pulled on the bridge. I sailed backward about 300 yards and smashed into the ground. If it hadn't been for my new invulnerability, I would have broken every bone in my body. I got to my feet, groaning. I really hate it when you Titans do that. Hyperion closed on me with blinding speed. I concentrated on the water, drawing strength from it. Hyperion attacked. He was powerful and fast, but he couldn't seem to land a blow. The ground around his feet kept erupting in flames, but I kept dousing it just as quickly.
"Stop it!"
the Titan roared.
"Stop that wind!"
I wasn't sure what he meant. I was too busy fighting. Hyperion stumbled like he was being pushed away. Water sprayed his face, stinging his eyes. The wind picked up, and Hyperion staggered backward.
"Percy!" Grover called in amazement. "How are you doing that?"
"Doing what?" I thought. Then I looked down, and I realized I was standing in the middle of my own personal hurricane. Clouds of water vapor swirled around me, winds so powerful they buffeted Hyperion and flattened the grass in a 20-yard radius. Enemy warriors threw javelins at me, but the storm knocked them aside.
"Sweet!" I muttered. "But a little more!"
Lightning flickered around me. The clouds darkened and the rain swirled faster. I closed in on Hyperion and blew him off his feet.
"Percy!" Grover called again. "Bring him over here!"
I slashed and jabbed, letting my reflexes take over. Hyperion could barely defend himself. His eyes kept trying to ignite, but the hurricane quenched his flames. I couldn't keep up a storm like this forever, though. I could feel my powers weakening. With one last effort, I propelled Hyperion across the field, straight to where Grover was waiting.
"I will not be toyed with," Hyperion bellowed.
He managed to get to his feet again, but Grover put his reed pipes to his lips and began to play. Linnaeus joined him. Around the grove, every satyr took up the song, an eerie melody, like a creek flowing over stones. The ground erupted at Hyperion's feet, gnarled roots wrapped around his legs.
"What's this?"
he protested. He tried to shake off the roots, but he was still weak. The roots thickened until he looked like he was wearing wooden boots.
"Stop this!"
he shouted.
"Your woodland magic is no match for a Titan."
But the more he struggled, the faster the roots grew. They curled about his body, thickening and hardening into bark. His golden armor melted into the wood, becoming part of a large trunk. The music continued. Hyperion's forces backed up in astonishment as their leader was absorbed. He stretched out his arms and they became branches, from which smaller branches shot out and grew leaves. The tree grew taller and thicker, until only the Titan's face was visible in the middle of the trunk.
"You cannot imprison me," he bellowed. "I am Hyperion.
The bark closed over his face. Grover took his pipes from his mouth.
"You are a very nice maple tree."
Several of the other satyrs passed out from exhaustion, but they'd done their job well. The Titan Lord was completely encased in an enormous maple. The trunk was at least 20 feet in diameter, with branches as tall as any in the park. The tree might have stood there for centuries. The Titan's army started to retreat. A cheer went up from the Athena cabin, but our victory was short-lived. Because just then, Kronos unleashed his surprise.
"Reet!"
The squeal echoed through Upper Manhattan. Demigods and monsters alike froze in terror. Grover shot me a panicked look.
"Why does that sound like it can't be?"
I knew what he was thinking. 2 years ago, we'd gotten a gift from Pan, a huge boar that carried us across the Southwest after it tried to kill us. The boar had a similar squeal, but what we were hearing now seemed higher pitched, shriller, almost like if the boar had an angry girlfriend.
Weeet!
A huge pink creature soared over the reservoir. A Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade nightmare blimp with wings.
A sow! Annabeth cried. Take cover!
The demigod scattered as the winged lady pig swooped down. Her wings were pink like a flamingo's, which matched her skin beautifully. But it was hard to think of her as cute when her hooves slammed into the ground, barely missing one of Annabeth's siblings. The pig stomped around and tore down half an acre of trees, belching a cloud of noxious gas. Then it took off again, circling around for another strike.
Don't tell me that thing is from Greek mythology, I complained.
Afraid so, Annabeth said. The Clasmonian sow. It terrorized Greek towns back in the day.
Let me guess, I said. Hercules beat it.
Nope, Annabeth said. As far as I know, no hero has ever beaten it.
Perfect, I muttered.
The Titan's army was recovering from its shock. I guess they realized the pig wasn't after them. We only had seconds before they were ready to fight, and our forces were still in a panic. Every time the sow belched, Grover's nature spirits yelped and faded back into their trees. That pig has to go. I grabbed a grappling hook from one of Annabeth's siblings. I'll take care of it. You guys hold the rest of the enemy. Push him back.
But Percy, Grover said, what if we can't?
I saw how tired he was. The magic had really drained him. Annabeth didn't look much better from fighting with a bad shoulder wound. I didn't know how the hunters were doing, but the right flank of the enemy army was now between them and us. I didn't want to leave my friends in such bad shape, but that sow was the biggest threat. It would destroy everything. Buildings, trees, sleeping mortals. It had to be stopped. Retreat if you need to, I said. Just slow them down. I'll be back as soon as I can. Before I could change my mind, I swung the grappling hook like a lasso. When the sow came down for its next pass, I threw with all my strength. The hook wrapped around the base of the pig's wing. It squealed in rage and veered off, yanking the rope and me into the sky.
If you're heading downtown from Central Park, my advice is to take the subway. Flying pigs are faster, but way more dangerous.
The sow soared past the Plaza Hotel, straight into the canyon of Fifth Avenue. My brilliant plan was to climb the rope and get on the pig's back. Unfortunately, I was too busy swinging around dodging street lamps and the sides of buildings. Another thing I learned? It's one thing to climb a rope in gym class. It's a completely different thing to climb a rope attached to a moving pig's wing while you're flying at 100 miles an hour. We zigzagged along several blocks and continued south on Park Avenue.
Boss! Hey, boss!
Out of the corner of my eye, I saw Blackjack speeding along next to us, darting back and forth to avoid the pig's wings.
Watch out!
I told him.
Hop on!
Blackjack whinnied.
I can catch you! Probably!
That wasn't very reassuring. Grand Central lay dead ahead. Above the main entrance stood the giant statue of Hermes, which I guess hadn't been activated because it was so high up. I was flying right toward him at the speed of demigod smashing.
Stay alert, I told Blackjack. I've got an idea. Oh, I hate your ideas.
I swung outward with all my might. Instead of smashing into the Hermes statue, I whipped around it, circling the rope under its arms. I thought this would tether the pig, but I underestimated the momentum of a 30-ton sow in flight. Just as the pig wrenched the statue loose from its pedestal, I let go. Hermes went for a ride, taking my place as the pig's passenger, and I free-fell toward the street. In that split second, I thought about the days when my mom used to work at the Grand Central Candy Shop. I thought how bad it would be if I ended up as a grease spot on the pavement. Then a shadow swooped under me, and thump, I was on Blackjack's back. It wasn't the most comfortable landing. In fact, when I yelled, "Oh!" my voice was an octave higher than usual.
"Sorry, boss," Blackjack murmured.
"No problem," I squeaked.
"Follow that pig."
The porker had taken a ride at East 42nd and was flying back toward Fifth Avenue. When it flew above the rooftops, I could see fires here and there around the city. It looked like my friends were having a rough time. Kronos was attacking on several fronts, but at the moment, I had my own problems. The Hermes statue was still on its leash. It kept bonking into buildings and spinning around. The pig swooped over an office building, and Hermes plowed into a water tower on the roof, blasting water and wood everywhere. Then something occurred to me.
"Get closer," I told Blackjack.
He whinnied in protest.
"Just within shouting distance," I said. "I need to talk to the statue."
"Now I'm sure you've lost it, boss,"
Blackjack said, but he did what I asked. When I was close enough to see the statue's face, I yelled,
"Hello, Hermes! Command sequence Daedalus 23! Kill flying pigs! Begin activation!"
Immediately, the statue moved its legs. It seemed confused to find that it was no longer on top of Grand Central Terminal. It was, instead, being given a sky ride on the end of a rope by a large winged sow. It smashed through the side of her brick building, which I think made it a little mad. It shook its head and began to climb the rope. I glanced down at the street. We were coming up on the main public library, with the big marble lions flanking the steps. Suddenly, I had a weird thought. Could stone statues be automatons too? It seemed like a long shot, but...
"Faster," I told Blackjack. "Get in front of the pig. Taunt him."
Boss?
"Trust me," I said. "I can do this. Probably."
"Oh, sure. Mock the horse."
Blackjack burst through the air. He could fly pretty darn fast when we wanted to. He got in front of the pig, which now had a metal Hermes on its back. Blackjack whinnied.
"You smell like ham."
He kicked the pig in the snout with his back hooves and went into a steep dive. The pig screamed in rage and followed. We barreled straight for the front steps of the library. Blackjack slowed down just enough for me to hop off. Then he kept flying toward the main doors. I yelled out,
"Lions! Command sequence! Daedalus 23, kill flying pigs! Begin activation!"
The lions stood up and looked at me. They probably thought I was teasing them, but just then...
"Reet!"
The massive pink pork monster landed with a thud, cracking the sidewalk. The lions stared at it, not believing their luck, and pounced. At the same time, a very beat-up Hermes statue leaped onto the pig's head and started banging it mercilessly with a caduceus. Those lions had some nasty claws. I drew Riptide, but there wasn't much for me to do. The pig disintegrated before my eyes. I almost felt sorry for it. I hoped it got to meet the boar of its dreams down in Tartarus. When the monster had completely turned to dust, the lions and the Hermes statue looked around in confusion.
"You can defend Manhattan now,"
I told them, but they didn't seem to hear. They went charging down Park Avenue, and I imagine they would keep looking for flying pigs until someone deactivated them.
"Hey, boss," said Blackjack, "can we take a donut break?"
I wiped the sweat off my brow. "I wish, big guy, but the fight's still going on." In fact, I could hear it getting closer. My friends needed help. I jumped on Blackjack, and we flew north toward the sound of explosions. Chapter 15. Chiron Throws a Party. Midtown was a war zone. We flew over little skirmishes everywhere. A giant was ripping up trees in Bryant Park while dryads pelted him with nuts. Outside the Waldorf Astoria, a bronze statue of Benjamin Franklin was whacking a hellhound with a rolled-up newspaper. A trio of Hephaestus campers fought a squad of Dracaenae in the middle of Rockefeller Center. I was tempted to stop and help, but I could tell from the smoke and noise that the real action had moved farther south. Our defenses were collapsing. The enemy was closing in on the Empire State Building. We did a quick sweep of the surrounding area. The hunters had set up a defensive line on 37th, just 3 blocks north of Olympus. To the east on Park Avenue, Jake Mason and some other Hephaestus campers were leading an army of statues against the enemy. To the west, the Demeter Cabin and Grover's Nature Spirits had turned 6th Avenue into a jungle that was hampering a squadron of Kronos' demigods. The south was clear for now, but the flanks of the enemy army were swinging around. A few more minutes, and we'd be totally surrounded. "We have to land where they need us most," I muttered.
"That's everywhere, boss!"
I spotted a familiar silver owl banner in the southeast corner of the fight, 33rd at the Park Avenue Tunnel. Annabeth and two of her siblings were holding back a Hyperborean giant.
"There!" I told Blackjack. He plunged toward the battle.
I leaped off his back and landed on the giant's head. When the giant looked up, I slid off his face, shield bashing his nose on the way down. The giant staggered backward, blue blood trickling from his nostrils. I hit the pavement running. The Hyperborean breathed a cloud of white mist, and the temperature dropped. The spot where I'd landed was now coated with ice, and I was covered in frost like a sugar donut.
"Hey, ugly!"
Annabeth yelled. I hoped she was talking to the giant, not me. Blue Boy bellowed and turned toward her, exposing the unprotected back of his legs. I charged and stabbed him behind the knee. The Hyperborean buckled. I waited for him to turn, but he froze. I mean, he literally turned to solid ice. From the point where I'd stabbed him, cracks appeared in his body. They got larger and wider until the giant crumbled in a mountain of blue shards.
"Thanks," Annabeth winced, trying to catch her breath. "The pig?"
"Pork chops," I said.
"Good."
She flexed her shoulder. Obviously, the wound was still bothering her, but she saw my expression and rolled her eyes.
"I'm fine, Percy. Come on. We've got plenty of enemies left."
She was right. The next hour was a blur. I fought like I'd never fought before, wading into legions of Dracaenae, taking out dozens of Telkines with every strike, destroying Impusae and knocking out enemy demigods. No matter how many I defeated, more took their place. Annabeth and I raced from block to block, trying to shore up our defenses. Too many of our friends lay wounded in the streets. Too many were missing. As the night wore on and the moon got higher, we were backed up foot by foot until we were only a block from the Empire State Building in any direction. At one point, Grover was next to me, bonking Snake Woman over the head with his cudgel. Then he disappeared in the crowd, and it was Thalia at my side, driving the monsters back with the power of her magic shield. Mrs. O'Leary bounded out of nowhere, picked up a Laestrygonian giant in her mouth, and flung him into the air like a frisbee. Annabeth used her invisibility cap to sneak behind the enemy lines. Whenever a monster disintegrated for no apparent reason with a surprised look on his face, I knew Annabeth had been there. But it still wasn't enough.
"Hold your lines!" Katie Gardner shouted, somewhere off to my left.
The problem was, there were too few of us to hold anything. The entrance to Olympus was 20 feet behind me, a ring of brave demigods, hunters, and nature spirits guarded the doors. I slashed and hacked, destroying everything in my path. But even I was getting tired, and I couldn't be everywhere at once. Behind the enemy troops, a few blocks to the east, a bright light began to shine. I thought it was the sunrise. Then I realized Kronos was riding toward us on a golden chariot. A dozen Lystragonian giants bore torches before him. Two Hyperboreans carried his black and purple banners. The Titan Lord looked fresh and rested, his powers at full strength. He was taking his time advancing, letting me wear myself down. Annabeth appeared next to me.
"We have to fall back to the doorway. Hold it at all costs."
She was right. I was about to order a retreat when I heard the hunting horn. It cut through the noise of the battle like a fire alarm. A chorus of horns answered from all around us, echoing off the buildings of Manhattan. I glanced at Thalia, but she just frowned.
"Not the hunters," she assured me. "We're all here."
"Then who?" The horns got louder. I couldn't tell where they were coming from because of the echo, but it sounded like an entire army was approaching. I was afraid it might be more enemies, but Kronos' forces looked as confused as we were. Giants lowered their clubs. Dracine hissed. Even Kronos' honor guard looked uneasy. Then to our left, 100 monsters cried out at once. Kronos' entire northern flank surged forward. I thought we were doomed, but they didn't attack. They ran straight past us and crashed into their southern allies. A new blast of horns shattered the night. The air shimmered. In a blur of movement, an entire cavalry appeared as if dropping out of light speed.
"Yeah, baby!"
a voice wailed.
"Party!"
A shower of arrows arced over our heads and slammed into the enemy, vaporizing hundreds of demons. But these weren't regular arrows. They made whizzy sounds as they flew like, "Whee!" Some had pinwheels attached to them. Others had boxing gloves rather than points.
"Centaurs!"
Annabeth yelled. The party pony army exploded into our midst in a riot of colors. Tie-dyed shirts, rainbow afro wigs, oversized sunglasses, and war-painted faces. Some had slogans scrawled across their flanks like "Horses Own" or "Kronos Sucks." Hundreds of them filled the entire block. My brain couldn't process everything I saw, but I knew if I were the enemy, I'd be running.
"Percy!"
Chiron shouted across the sea of wild centaurs. He was dressed in armor from the waist up, his bow in his hand, and he was grinning in satisfaction.
"Sorry we're late."
"Dude!"
another centaur yelled.
"Talk later! Waste monsters now!"
He locked and loaded a double-barrel paint gun and blasted an enemy hellhound bright pink. The paint must have been mixed with celestial bronze dust or something, because as soon as it splattered the hellhound, the monster yelped and dissolved into a pink and black puddle.
"Party ponies!" a centaur yelled. "South Florida chapter!"
Somewhere across the battlefield, a twangy voice yelled back,
"Horde of Texas chapter!"
"Hawaii owns your faces!"
a third one shouted. It was the most beautiful thing I'd ever seen. The entire Titan army turned and fled, pushed back by a flood of paintballs, arrows, swords, and Nerf baseball bats. The centaurs trampled everything in their path.
"Stop running, you fools!"
Kronos yelled.
"Stand and
That last part was because a panicked Hyperborean giant stumbled backward and sat on top of him. The Lord of Time disappeared under a giant blue butt. We pushed them for several blocks until Chiron yelled,
"Hold! On your promise, hold!"
It wasn't easy, but eventually the order got relayed up and down the ranks of centaurs, and they started to pull back, letting the enemy flee.
"Chiron's smart,"
Annabeth said, wiping the sweat off her face. If we pursue, we'll get too spread out. We need to regroup.
But the enemy, they're not defeated, she agreed.
But the dawn is coming. At least we bought some time. I didn't like pulling back, but I knew she was right. I watched as the last of the Telkines scuttled toward the East River. Then reluctantly, I turned and headed back toward the Empire State Building. We set up a 2-block perimeter with a command tent at the Empire State Building. Chiron informed us that the party ponies had sent chapters from almost every state in the Union, 40 from California, 2 from Rhode Island, 30 from Illinois. Roughly 500 total had answered his call, but even with that many, we couldn't defend more than a few blocks.
Dude,
said a centaur named Larry. His t-shirt identified him as Big Chief Uber Guy, New Mexico chapter.
That was more fun than our last convention in Vegas.
Yeah,
said Owen from South Dakota. He wore a black leather jacket and an old World War II army helmet.
We totally wasted them.
Chiron patted Owen on the back.
You did well, my friends, but don't get careless. Kronos should never be underestimated. Now why don't you visit the diner on West 33rd and get some breakfast? I hear the Delaware chapter found a stash of root beer.
Root beer?
They almost trampled each other as they galloped off. Chiron smiled. Annabeth gave him a big hug, and Mrs. O'Leary licked his face.
Ah, he grumbled. Enough of that, dog. Yes, I'm glad to see you too.
Chiron, thanks, I said. Talk about saving the day. He shrugged.
I'm sorry it took so long. Centaurs travel fast, as you know. We can bend distance as we ride. Even so, getting all the centaurs together was no easy task. The party ponies are not exactly organized.
How'd you get through the magic defenses around the city? Annabeth asked.
They slowed us down a bit, Chiron admitted. But I think they're intended mostly to keep mortals out. Kronos doesn't want puny humans getting in the way of his great victory.
So maybe other reinforcements can get through, I said hopefully. Chiron stroked his beard.
Perhaps, though time is short. As soon as Kronos regroups, he will attack again. Without the element of surprise on our side.
I understood what he meant. Kronos wasn't beaten, not by a long shot. I half hoped Kronos had been squashed under that Hyperborean giant's butt, but I knew better. He'd be back. Tonight at the latest.
And Typhon? I asked.
Chiron's face darkened.
The gods are tiring. Dionysus was incapacitated yesterday. Typhon smashed his chariot, and the wine god went down somewhere in the Appalachians. No one has seen him since. Hephaestus is out of action as well. He was thrown from the battle so hard he created a new lake in West Virginia. He will heal, but not soon enough to help. The others still fight. They've managed to slow Typhon's approach, but the monster cannot be stopped. He will arrive in New York by this time tomorrow. Once he and Kronos combine forces...
Then what chance do we have? I said. We can't hold out another day.
We'll have to, Thalia said. I'll see about setting some new traps around the perimeter.
She looked exhausted. Her jacket was smeared in grime and monster dust, but she managed to get to her feet and stagger off.
I will help her, Chiron decided. I should make sure my brethren don't go too overboard with the root beer.
I thought too overboard pretty much summed up the party ponies, but Chiron cantered off, leaving Annabeth and me alone. She cleaned the monster slime off her knife. I'd seen her do that hundreds of times, but I never thought about why she cared so much about the blade.
At least your mama's okay, I offered.
If you call fighting Typhon okay... She locked eyes with me.
Percy, even with the centaur's help, I'm starting to think...
I know. I had a bad feeling this might be our last chance to talk, and I felt like there were a million things I hadn't told her. Listen, there were some visions Hestia showed me. You mean about Luke? Maybe it was just a safe guess, but I got the feeling Annabeth knew what I'd been holding back. Maybe she'd been having dreams of her own. Yeah, I said, you and Thalia and Luke, the first time you met, and the time you met Hermes. Annabeth slipped her knife back into its sheath. Luke promised he'd never let me get hurt. He said we'd be a new family, and it would turn out better than his. Her eyes reminded me of that 7-year-old girl's in the alley, angry, scared, desperate for a friend. Thalia talked to me earlier, I said. She's afraid that I can't face Luke, she said miserably. I nodded. But there's something else you should know. Ethan Nakamura seemed to think Luke was still alive inside his body, maybe even fighting Kronos for control. Annabeth tried to hide it, but I could almost see her mind working on the possibilities, maybe starting to hope. I didn't want to tell you, I admitted. She looked up at the Empire State Building. Percy, for so long in my life, I felt like everything was changing, all the time. I didn't have anyone I could rely on. I nodded. That was something most demigods could understand. I ran away when I was 7, she said. Then with Luke and Thalia, I thought I'd found a family, but it fell apart almost immediately. What I'm saying? I hate it when people let me down. When things are temporary, I think that's why I want to be an architect. To build something permanent, I said. A monument to last 1,000 years. She held my eyes. I guess that sounds like my fatal flaw again. Years ago, in the Sea of Monsters, Annabeth had told me her biggest flaw was pride, thinking she could fix anything. I'd even seen a glimpse of her deepest desire, shown to her by the siren's magic. Annabeth had imagined her mother and father together, standing in front of a newly rebuilt Manhattan, designed by Annabeth. And Luke had been there too, good again, welcoming her home. I guess I understand how you feel, I said. But Thalia's right. Luke has already betrayed you so many times. He was evil even before Kronos. I don't want him to hurt you anymore. Annabeth pursed her lips. I could tell she was trying not to get mad. And you'll understand if I keep hoping there's a chance you're wrong. I looked away. I felt like I'd done my best, but that didn't make me feel any better. Across the street, the Apollo campers had set up a field hospital to tend the wounded. Dozens of campers and almost as many hunters. I was watching the medics work and thinking about our slim chances for holding Mount Olympus. And suddenly, I wasn't there anymore. I was standing in a long, dingy bar with black walls, neon signs, and a bunch of partying adults. A banner across the bar read, "Happy Birthday, Bobby Earl." Country music played on the speakers. Big guys in jeans and work shirts crowded the bar. Waitresses carried trays of drinks and shouted at each other. It was pretty much exactly the kind of place my mom would never let me go. I was stuck in the very back of the room, next to the bathrooms, which didn't smell so great, and a couple of antique arcade games.
"Oh, good. You're here," said the man at the Pac-Man machine. "I'll have a Diet Coke."
He was a pudgy guy in a leopard skin Hawaiian shirt, purple shorts, red running shoes, and black socks, which didn't exactly make him blend in with the crowd. His nose was bright red. A bandage was wrapped around his curly black hair like he was recovering from a concussion. I blinked. "Mr. D?" He sighed, not taking his eyes from the game.
"Really, Peter Johnson, How long will it take for you to recognize me on sight?
About as long as it'll take you to figure out my name, I muttered. Where are we?
Why, Bobby Earl's birthday party,
Dionysus said.
Somewhere in lovely rural America.
I thought Typhon swatted you out of the sky. They said you crash-landed.
Your concern is touching. I did crash-land. Very painfully. In fact, part of me is still buried under 100 feet of rubble in an abandoned coal mine. It will be several more hours before I have enough strength to mend. But in the meantime, part of my consciousness is here.
At a bar, playing Pac-Man.
Party time,
Dionysus said.
Surely you've heard of it. Wherever there's a party, my presence is invoked. Because of this, I can exist in many different places at once. The only problem was finding a party. I don't know if you're aware of how serious things are outside your safe little bubble of New York.
Safe little bubble?
But believe me, the mortals out here in the heartland are panicking. Typhon has terrified them. Very few are throwing parties. Apparently Bobby Earl and his friends, bless them, are a little slow. They haven't yet figured out that the world is ending.
So I'm not really here?
No. In a moment I'll send you back to your normal, insignificant life, and it will be as if nothing had happened.
And why did you bring me here? Dionysus snorted.
Oh, I didn't want you particularly. Any of you silly heroes would do. That Annie girl.
Annabeth.
The point is,
he said,
I pulled you into party time to deliver a warning. We are in danger.
Gee, I said. Never would have figured that out. Thanks. He glared at me and momentarily forgot his game. Pac-Man got eaten by the red ghost dude.
Era Escarocus, Blinky,
Dionysus cursed.
I will have your soul.
He's a video game character, I said.
That's no excuse, and you're ruining my game, Jorgensen.
Jackson.
Whichever. Now listen, the situation is graver than you imagine. If Olympus falls, not only will the gods fade, but everything that is connected to our legacy will also begin to unravel. The very fabric of your puny little civilization.
The game played a song, and Mr. D progressed to level 254.
Ha! Huh?
He shouted.
Take that, you pixelated fiends.
Fabric of civilization? I prompted.
Yes, yes, your entire society will dissolve. Perhaps not right away, but mark my words, the chaos of the Titans will mean the end of Western civilization. Art, law, wine tasting, music, video games, silk shirts, black velvet paintings, all the things that make life worth living will disappear.
So why aren't the gods rushing back to help us? I said. We should combine forces at Olympus. Forget Typhon. He snapped his fingers impatiently.
You forgot my Diet Coke.
Gods, you're annoying. I got the attention of a waitress and ordered the stupid soda. I put it on Bobby Earl's tab. Mr. D took a good long drink. His eyes never left the video game.
The truth is, Pierre...
Percy.
The other gods would never admit this. But we actually need you mortals to rescue Olympus. You see, we are manifestations of your culture. If you don't care enough to save Olympus yourselves...
Like Pan, I said, depending on the satyrs to save the wild.
Yes, quite. I will deny I ever said this, of course, but the gods need heroes. They always have. Otherwise, we would not keep you annoying little brats around.
I feel so wanted. Thanks.
Use the training I have given you at camp.
What training?
You know, all those hero techniques and... No.
Mr. D slapped the game console.
Na pari I ichi. The last level.
He looked at me, and a purple fire flickered in his eyes.
As I recall, I once predicted you would turn out to be as selfish as all the other human heroes. Well, here is your chance to prove me wrong.
Yeah, making you proud is real high on my list.
You must save Olympus, Pedro. Leave Typhon to the Olympians and save our own seats of power. It must be done.
Great. Nice little chat. Now, if you don't mind, my friends will be wondering...
There is more,
Mr. D warned.
Kronos has not yet attained full power. The body of the mortal was only a temporary measure.
We kind of guessed that.
And did you also guess that within a day at most, Kronos will burn away that mortal body and take on the true form of a Titan king?
And that would mean... Dionysus inserted another quarter.
You know about the true forms of the gods.
Yeah, you can't look at them without burning up.
Kronos would be 10 times more powerful. His very presence would incinerate you. And once he achieves this, he will empower the other Titans. They are weak now, compared to what they will soon become, unless you can stop them. The world will fall, the gods will die, and I will never achieve a perfect score on this stupid machine.
Maybe I should have been terrified, but honestly, I was already about as scared as I could get. Can I go now? I asked.
One last thing. My son Pollux, is he alive?
I blinked. Yeah, last I saw him.
I would very much appreciate it if you could keep him that way. I lost his brother Castor last year.
I remember. I stared at him, trying to wrap my mind around the idea that Dionysus could be a caring father. I wondered how many other Olympians were thinking about their demigod children right now. I'll do my best.
Your best,
Dionysus muttered.
Well, isn't that reassuring? Go now. You have some nasty surprises to deal with, and I must defeat Blinky.
Nasty surprises? He waved his hand, and the bar disappeared. I was back on Fifth Avenue. Annabeth hadn't moved. She didn't give any sign that I'd been gone or anything. She caught me staring and frowned. What? Nothing, I guess. I gazed down the avenue, wondering what Mr. D had meant by nasty surprises. How much worse could it get? My eyes rested on a beat-up blue car. The hood was badly dented, like somebody had tried to hammer out some huge craters. My skin tingled. Why did that car look so familiar? Then I realized it was a Prius. Paul's Prius. I bolted down the street. Percy, Annabeth called. Where are you going? Paul was passed out in the driver's seat. My mom was snoring beside him. My mind felt like mush. How had I not seen them before? They'd been sitting here in traffic for over a day, the battle raging around them, and I hadn't even noticed. They must have seen those blue lights in the sky. I rattled the doors, but they were locked. I need to get them out. Percy, Annabeth said gently. I can't leave them here. I sounded a little crazy. I pounded on the windshield. I have to move them. I have to. Percy, just hold on. Annabeth waved to Chiron, who was talking to some centaurs down the block. We can push the car to a side street, all right? They're going to be fine. My hands trembled. After all I'd been through over the last few days, I felt so stupid and weak, but the sight of my parents made me want to break down. Chiron galloped over.
What's? Oh, dear, I see.
They were coming to find me, I said. My mom must have sensed something was wrong.
Most likely, Chiron said. But Percy, they will be fine. The best thing we can do for them is stay focused on our job.
Then I noticed something in the back seat of the Prius, and my heart skipped a beat. Seatbelted behind my mother was a black and white Greek jar about 3 feet tall. Its lid was wrapped in a leather harness. No way, I muttered. Annabeth pressed her hand to the window. That's impossible. I thought you left that at the plaza. Locked in a vault, I agreed. Chiron saw the jar, and his eyes widened.
That isn't
Pandora's jar. I told him about my meeting with Prometheus.
Then the jar is yours, Chiron said grimly. It will follow you and tempt you to open it, no matter where you leave it. It will appear when you are weakest.
Like now, I thought, looking at my helpless parents. I imagined Prometheus smiling, so anxious to help out us poor mortals. Give up hope, and I will know that you are surrendering. I promise Kronos will be lenient. Anger surged through me. I drew Riptide and cut through the driver's side window like it was made of plastic wrap. We'll put the car in neutral, I said. Push them out of the way and take that stupid jar to Olympus. Chiron nodded.
A good plan, but Percy...
Whatever he was going to say, he faltered. A mechanical drumbeat grew loud in the distance. The chop, chop, chop of a helicopter. On a normal Monday morning in New York, this would have been no big deal. But after 2 days of silence, a mortal helicopter was the oddest thing I'd ever heard. A few blocks east, the monster army shouted and jeered as the helicopter came into view. It was a civilian model, painted dark red, with a bright green DE logo on the side. The words under the logo were too small to read, but I knew what they said. Dare Enterprises. My throat closed up. I looked at Annabeth and could tell she recognized the logo too. Her face was as red as the helicopter. What is she doing here? Annabeth demanded. How did she get through the barrier?
Who? Chiron looked confused. What mortal would be insane enough?
Suddenly, the helicopter pitched forward.
The Morpheus enchantment, Chiron said. The foolish mortal pilot is asleep.
I watched in horror as the helicopter careened sideways, falling toward a row of office buildings. Even if it didn't crash, the gods of the air would probably swat it out of the sky for coming near the Empire State Building. I was too paralyzed to move, but Annabeth whistled and Guido the Pegasus swooped out of nowhere.
You rang for a handsome horse? He asked.
Come on, Percy, Annabeth growled. We have to save your friend. Chapter 16. We get help from a thief. Here's my definition of not fun. Fly a Pegasus toward an out-of-control helicopter. If Guido had been any less of a fancy flyer, we would have been chopped to confetti. I could hear Rachel screaming inside. For some reason, she hadn't fallen asleep, but I could see the pilot slumped over the controls, pitching back and forth as the helicopter wobbled toward the side of an office building.
Ideas?
I asked Annabeth.
You're going to have to take Guido and get out, she said. What are you going to do?
In response, she said,
"Hee-ya!"
and Guido went into a nosedive. Duck! Annabeth yelled. We passed so close to the rotors, I felt the force of the blades ripping at my hair. We zipped along the side of the helicopter, and Annabeth grabbed the door. That's when things went wrong. Guido's wings slammed against the helicopter. He plummeted straight down with me on his back, leaving Annabeth dangling from the side of the aircraft. I was so terrified, I could barely think. But as Guido spiraled, I caught a glimpse of Rachel pulling Annabeth inside the copter. "Hang in there!" I yelled at Guido.
"My wing!" he moaned. "It's busted!"
"You can do it!" I desperately tried to remember what Selena used to tell us in Pegasus riding lessons. "Just relax the wing, extend it, and glide." We fell like a rock, straight toward the pavement 300 feet below. At the last moment, Guido extended his wings. I saw the faces of centaurs gaping up at us. Then we pulled out of our dive, sailed 50 feet, and tumbled onto the pavement, Pegasus over demigod.
"Ow!" Guido moaned. "My legs! My head! My wings!"
Chiron galloped over with his medical pouch and began working on the Pegasus. I got to my feet. When I looked up, my heart crawled into my throat. The helicopter was only a few seconds away from slamming into the side of the building. Then, miraculously, the helicopter righted itself. It spun in a circle and hovered. Very slowly, it began to descend. It seemed to take forever, but finally, the helicopter thudded to a landing in the middle of Fifth Avenue. I looked through the windshield and couldn't believe what I was seeing. Annabeth was at the controls. I ran forward as the rotor spun to a stop. Rachel opened the side door and dragged out the pilot. Rachel was still dressed like she was on vacation, in beach shorts, a t-shirt, and sandals. Her hair was tangled, and her face was green from the helicopter ride. Annabeth climbed out last. I stared at her in awe. "I didn't know you could fly a helicopter."
"Neither did I," she said. "My dad's crazy into aviation. Plus, Daedalus had some notes on flying machines. I just took my best guess on the controls."
"You saved my life," Rachel said. Annabeth flexed her bad shoulder.
"Yeah, well, let's not make a habit of it. What are you doing here, Dare? Don't you know better than to fly into a war zone?"
Rachel glanced at me.
"I had to be here. I knew Percy was in trouble."
"Got that right," Annabeth grumbled.
"Well, if you'll excuse me, I have some injured friends I've got to tend to. Glad you could stop by, Rachel."
"Annabeth," I called. She stormed off. Rachel plopped down on the curb and put her head in her hands.
"I'm sorry, Percy. I didn't mean to. I always mess things up."
It was kind of hard to argue with her, though I was glad she was safe. I looked in the direction Annabeth had gone, but she disappeared into the crowd. I couldn't believe what she'd just done. Saved Rachel's life, landed a helicopter, and walked away like it was no big deal. "It's okay," I told Rachel, though my words sounded hollow. "So what's the message you wanted to deliver?" She frowned.
"How did you know about that?"
"A dream." Rachel didn't look surprised. She tugged at her beach shorts. They were covered in drawings, which wasn't unusual for her, but these symbols I recognized. Greek letters, pictures from camp beads, sketches of monsters, and faces of gods. I didn't understand how Rachel could have known about some of that. She'd never been to Olympus or Camp Half-Blood.
"I've been seeing things, too," she muttered. "I mean, not just through the mist. This is different. I've been drawing pictures, writing lines."
"In ancient Greek," I said. "Do you know what they say?"
"That's what I wanted to talk to you about. I was hoping, well, if you had gone with us on vacation, I was hoping you could have helped me figure out what's happening to me."
She looked at me pleadingly. Her face was sunburned from the beach.
Her nose was peeling. I couldn't get over the shock that she was here in person. She'd forced her family to cut short their vacation, agreed to go to a horrible school.